Welcome to the Calcio FC podcast. I am your host, Amit Gates, and with me is Destination Calcio senior writer, Dan Cantian. So, Dan, today me and you, we're going to discuss Monza and the end of a dynasty.
Indeed.
In the Italian game. As some of you know, Dan, you've written a very good article on Monza and new ownership with a US consortium buying the club from the Berlusconi family. And talk us through the article and what does this mean for Monza and the Berlusconi family?
Yeah, so BLV, this US consortium, have taken over Monza. They joined the ever-growing list of American owners in Serie A. Heading into next season, we're going to have at least almost 10 clubs. So almost half Serie A is owned by American companies. You've got the likes of Inter Milan, AC Milan, Roma, Hellas Verona, Fiorentina, of course. Then you've got Canadian in Joey Saputo at Bologna. You've got American owners owning a 55% stake in Atalanta. So, we talk a lot about the Premier League and about how American influence is dominating football on British shores, but when you look at Italy, it's very much the same. It's probably to an even bigger extent. And Monza have been bought for about £35 million, which includes 50 million quid worth of debt that this consortium has agreed to buy off the Berlusconi family, and they are looking to write them off to balance the books. They are somewhat an interesting buyer in the sense that, like, they've never invested in football before. They've spent over $10 billion in entertainment and sort of TV sector, but they've never stepped into football before. Their only connection with football is that their founder and manager has helped restructure Chelsea's commercial department, but that's as far as they go. So they don't own any club. They have no stakes in any club. And they're basically betting the Monza for two reasons. One is the Monza are cheap to buy. A lot of Italian clubs, as you will know, are cheap. Yeah. Way cheaper than clubs in the Premier League. And two is because Monza are the one Italian club that have not been bought by an American consortium that has potential in terms of where they are. Obviously, Como have been taken over by an Indonesian consortium a few years ago, obviously coming on the lakeside location. So there is a lot of appeal outside the football, even though Como have done brilliantly last season. The likes of Venezia, again, were bought over by an American that things didn't quite pan out as they'd hoped. But obviously Venice, the appeal of Venice is, it's obvious. And it's the same with Pisa, the family, the Nasta family there taking over the club. Again, Pisa, tourist magnet for people from all over the world. There is potential there. Monza are not on the scale of Venice and Pisa and Como when it comes to tourism, but they are a huge name in sport because of the Formula One connection. Monza has hosted the Italian Grand Prix since 1949, which is a year before the World Championship was established in 1950. They've hosted the Italian Grand Prix ever since, apart from 1980 when the track was being redeveloped and the hosting rights were awarded to Imola, which is near Bologna. The track has been redeveloped last year and has signed a new deal to be part of the calendar since 2031, at least. And Monza, if you follow motorsport, Monza is your San Siro, is your Santiago Bernabeu. It is a temple of motorsport. They call it the Temple of Speed. It's the oldest purpose-built racetrack in mainland Europe and the third oldest racetrack in the world after Indianapolis and Brooklyn.
Because I think to a lot of people, Monza is associated with Formula. They would think of Formula One think of football.
Yeah. Monza have been, with the greatest respect, they've been an afterthought in football. They returned to Serie B in 2020, and that was after they'd been away from Serie B for about two decades. They got promoted to Serie A in 2022, and that was the first time they'd been promoted. And they went down last season, and they went down without even firing a shot in anger, let's be honest. So Monza, as you said, they are synonymous with Formula One. But there is a view that by buying a club that is based in Monza and is cheap, Formula One is huge now in the US because of Netflix Drive to Survive series. It's arguably one of the fastest growing sports in America. And if you're an American company with a few million down the back of the sofa, why not buy an Italian club based in a location which is synonymous with one sport that is surging in experiencing a surge in popularity in the US? So it's a no-brainer as far as they're concerned. And to be honest, I mean, I'm not a financial expert by any means, but when you can invest $10 billion across various sectors, I don't think they're spending 30 million pounds for a club is going to sort of have... it's not going to leave a damaging scar to your finances, even if the project doesn't work out. But the main story is, as you alluded at the top of the show, is that this marks the end of the Berlusconi dynasty. Now, everyone knows Silvio Berlusconi from his AC Milan days, but he took over Monza in 2018, a year after stepping down from his AC Milan role, and he spent a lot of money on Monza. He spent 285 million euros. The problem is that the investment, I mean, the investment paid off to a point. Monza playing a nice little stadium, the U-Power Stadium is, well, it's not a spectacular venue per se, but it's functional. It's a lot more modern than some of his Serie A counterparts.
Yeah, because you went to it last season, didn't you, with David along to see Monza and Inter
Milan. Yeah. It is, it's a nice little ground. The there are some design flaws, the main one being from the press, from the press seats, you can't see one of the flanks of the pitch. But
well, it is stadiums in Italy. There is going to be design flaws.
There are design flaws. And also, if you happen to be the U-Power Stadium in the summer, I would recommend bringing repellent for mosquitoes because they are the size of a helicopter. So Monza came... There is a reason, but... Well, there are different suggestions to why Berlusconi bought Monza. Some suggested that he could not be away from football.
Yeah.
Another one is a suggestion that being so close to Milan, you know, home is where the heart is and all the rest of it. He invested in Monza because he wanted to basically sort of establish a local club back in the big time. I mean, I said back in the big time, as I said earlier, they'd never been to Serie A up until he showed up.
Yeah.
Berlusconi did bring Adriano Galliani with him, his lieutenant from the AC Milan days. And Galliani had been at Monza before joining Fininvest, Berlusconi holding company, which basically Berlusconi built his own empire upon. And so the two of them, you know, it was kind of like the last dance, so to speak.
Yeah, it was like getting the band back together for one last tour. Together,
yeah, and they did reasonably well. You know, they brought Monza back in Serie B and then into Serie A. But with Berlusconi passing in 2023, there has been an acceptance that the family may not be as committed to Monza as he would have been, perhaps, in his heydays. And, you know, relegation this season, as I said, they went down without firing a shot in anger. And I think there is definitely scope for Monza to become the sort of club that can bounce back straight away. You know, this American consortium.
Yeah.
Have their pockets and, you know yourself, you know, Serie B, and dynamics can change in the blink of an eye.
Yeah. And the thing is, if Monza keep a lot of the squad that went down, if they keep a lot of them, they're more than good enough to bounce back up.
Oh, absolutely.
Because if you look through their squad, they have quality there.
Yeah.
Obviously, last year, they were horrible from start to end. But for Serie B, if they keep them, they're more than good enough to bounce back.
They definitely are. And also, you know, one of the hardest things to sort of achieve in Serie B is like financial stability. And if you have investors with their pockets coming in, that should give Monza a massive leg up on, if not all of their rivals, most of their rivals anyway.
Yeah. I think, Dan, we should, for the listener and the viewer, what is the name of the consortium?
Yeah, you're right. I should have mentioned earlier, they are called Beckett Lane Ventures, but they go by BLV. And as we said earlier, they are a consortium that is establish a sizable presence in entertainment and the commercial sector. They've only barely scratched the surface in sport with their involvement with Chelsea, but they are by any, you know, by all accounts, the next...
Have they stipulated a reason why Monza? Or do you think it is because of the Formula One?
Well, I do. They've not sort of been explicit about it, but I do think that when you put two and two together, it's definitely the fact that Monza is so attractive. I don't think the Monza would have been as attractive 10 years ago to an American investor. It might have been attractive to a German investor, to a British investor, to a Spanish investor. But Formula One has grown so much in the US now that it is a TV show first and foremost through Netflix. It's a TV product, and I think it just makes too much sense for a US company to... It's on a silver platter for them. You know, like, you can come in and buy Monza for a relatively cheap price. Also because, as I said, the Berlusconi family invested 280 million in Monza. Monza's relegation has basically forced them to, I wouldn't say to conduct a fire sale, but they can't expect to sort of, you know, claw back the money that they invested. And, you know, there is an acceptance in Italy that the Berlusconi family won out. They don't want, they have no interest in being in sport anymore.
Yeah, I think it seemed to me, at least, that once Silvio died, it was the beginning of the end for the Berlusconi family. Having Monza on their books and their portfolio, they kind of, you know, his children, his partners, business partners wanted out of sport.
Yeah. I mean, I think the sport is, also Monza in itself, as we said, it was not AC Milan, was it? It was a case of we have something, but it's not.
Yeah.
You know, the glory days of yesteryear are a million miles away. And as you said, they wanted out. I think that there is a twofold as well. One of them is that running a Serie B club is not as profitable as some people may think.
No.
Because, you know, the TV rights in Italy are, the value is suppressed season after season. The parachute payments are, again, a pittance. They make a difference in Italy, but they're a pittance compared to when you look at the Premier League or you're looking even like other second divisions across Europe. So it's a case of spending money just to stand still rather than spending money to move forward.
Yeah.
And the other reason, I think, when you have built an empire like the Berlusconi family for 40 years in sport, there is so much pressure on you to succeed and to deliver success. And, you know, you go from success being classified as winning the Champions League, winning the Scudetto with Milan, to barely being in Serie A with Monza is...
Yeah.
It's, you know, you're talking about completely different dynamics here.
Yeah, and even the final 10 years of Berlusconi's reign in Milan.
Yeah.
If you compare the first 20 and then you compare the last 10, you know, after they won the Champions League in 2007, he sold the club in, what, 2016, 2017?
2017, yeah.
So that 10 years, Milan got one league title.
Yeah.
And that was it. That's all they won. They entered the banter years.
Yeah.
And the end of the end of Silvio's reign of Milan compared to the beginning, it's night and day difference.
Yeah. Football was a completely different sport by the time he left.
It passed. Berlusconi was a victim of his own success.
It was.
Because he is one of the blueprints of why football is what it is now.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it basically got to the stage where he was actually too poor, in a way.
Yeah.
And it's funny, Berlusconi's family is worth billions, but they were too poor to compete with the Premier League, with, you know, nation states and all the rest of it.
They were. I mean, you're absolutely right. You look at Berlusconi won 29 major trophies as chairman of AC Milan. And 28 in 31 years, 28 of them came in the first 21 years he was in charge.
Yeah.
And then just one in the last decade.
Yes.
And you're absolutely right, because, you know, Berlusconi came to... Ironically, Berlusconi bought AC Milan at arguably the lowest step, because Milan had been Serie B because of the Totonero match-fixing scandal. They returned to Serie A, then they went back down again in 1982, this time just to be...
Just because they were
horrible.
Rubbish.
Yeah, they were terrible. They were terrible. And... he took Milan over in 1986, and this was... Berlusconi was probably not famous outside Italy by then, but this was arguably peak Berlusconi. He was a TV media mogul. He threw... Some describe him as a visionary, some will describe him as a ruthless capitalist. The truth is probably somewhere in between, as ever in these situations. He built an empire on private television. He basically went around local TV stations in northern Italy and in France, and he hoovered up just local broadcasters. And he turned some of these broadcasters into national broadcasters at the time when Rai, the Italian version of the BBC, held a monopoly on broadcasting pretty much everything through TV and radio, and no other broadcaster could add rights to broadcast live events. Berlusconi, through a law decree, managed to get that changed. This was long before he entered politics. Yeah. But it wasn't a case of, you know, him serving his own personal interest.
This is like, what, late 70s, early 80s?
Talking early 80s. And his first, you know, he had, at the time, deep, deep pockets, far deeper than anyone involved in this particular field had ever seen before. No one had, back then, the TV was just a vehicle for to deliver news, deliver the old quiz show, the old TV series. But he was way ahead of his time. He thought having live sports on TV is going to revolutionize both TV and sport per se.
Yeah.
And that's why when he took charge of AC Milan, one of his first plans, which then never came to pass, was to sort of, he proposed a Serie A version of NFL Red Zone, which is basically broadcasting every game simultaneously. This is at a time where every Serie A game was on a Sunday afternoon at the same time.
Yeah.
And having basically reporters at every ground, not describing the action, you'd be able to watch the action. This never came to pass because Serie A opposed it. But this just goes to show his vision. And then, of course, he became instrumental in forming the Champions League. Yeah. Berlusconi actually planted, probably you could argue, he planted the seed of the Super League long before the 2021 protest came about.
Because wasn't it off the back of Diego Maradona's Napoli?
Yeah.
Facing Real Madrid in the first round of the 1987-88 European Cup.
He
was like, you can't have Napoli and Real Madrid meeting in the first round while you've got the champions of Hungary meeting the champions of Greece in the quarterfinal. Like, that's
exactly.
He was the one that's seen football as an entertainment product.
Yeah, exactly. He saw football as an entertainment product, and he saw the value in having football he wanted TV to serve football and vice versa, whereas before they'd always been two completely separate entities.
Yeah.
But he also knew that to be successful as a businessman, he will need a successful club, which is why he turned Milan upside down. He turned them from a tie that had been said to be twice in three seasons to arguably the greatest club side the world has ever seen. He hired Arrigo Sacchi in 87. Sacchi won the Scudetto. He won two European Cups on the bounce. He won the European Super Cup twice. He won the Intercontinental Cup twice. And football became no longer just a sport, but as you said, it was an entertainment product by then. There was, you know, flamboyant signings. The Dutch trio of Ruud Gullit, Marco van Basten, Frank Rijkaard, and then, you know, you continue later on with the likes of Dejan Savicevic, Marcel Desailly, all the way to Andrei Shevchenko and Kaká, you know, even like way into his 60s and 70s, Berlusconi was renowned for being the one making the signings as opposed to, you know, it wasn't a case of Ancelotti picking the players. It was like, I want this player, I'll sign this player. This player is going to play in the position I deem to be more suited to.
And Ancelotti tells the story that Berlusconi came to him and he always said two strikers.
Yeah.
Always two strikers. Yeah. Eventually Ancelotti won him over and Ancelotti adapted a Christmas tree formation. Yeah. It was like a 4-3-2-1.
Yeah.
But originally Berlusconi was like, Mr. Two Strikers, always.
Yeah, no, there was, for younger listeners, younger viewers who may not be familiar with chairman, like club owners getting involved, Berlusconi will be speaking to the press regularly after games, and it will not be a case of him delivering, you know, the odd vanilla line to the media. He will criticize the managers for not doing what he had told them to do. It's like, you know, had you followed my instruction, we would have won this game.
He wasn't media trained.
No, he was not. Ironically, for a media mogul, he was not media trained at all. But as we said, a visionary or a ruthless capitalist, it depends. Berlusconi had another idea that extended way beyond football, because he wasn't just happy with success on the pitch. He wanted to dominate more sports. So in 1989, decided I'm going to follow the example set by Barcelona and Real Madrid. So we're going to have what he called the Polisportiva, a club competing across different sports. So he bought clubs in Milan in hockey, rugby, volleyball, baseball, and he tried to buy the basketball team as well, the family which owned the Olympia Milan team at the time, were strongly opposed to him getting involved, so they rejected his offer. And for 5 years, the Berlusconi empire through Fininvest, which was, the, as I said earlier, the main holding company, controlled AC Milan, as well as like teams in rugby, baseball, and all the other sports we just mentioned. And Berlusconi went about them the same way they went about running AC Milan. It wasn't a case of, oh, okay, we are happy to compete. We need to win, and we need to win with the best players in the world. So he signed three players to his volleyball team that have won the World Championship in 1990 with Italy. And when he signed them, one of them tells the story of being offered less money to join more established teams at the time. And Berlusconi basically said to him, well, give me a figure. And he was like, well, what do you mean, give you a figure? And Berlusconi was adamant that doesn't matter whether the other teams are more established. You give me a figure, I'll double that, and you'll sign for us because I've got that much money. And that's just how things work. That's how things work in my TV empire, you know. I want to hire a certain TV host. It doesn't matter whether he's signed up to the state broadcaster. I'm going to offer him more money, and he will follow the money. That's just how he operated. And a lot of players did that. And vice versa, when other teams wanted to sign his players, it would just be a case of, well, no, we'll just raise their salaries so no one else would be able to afford them, you know.
Yeah, and he did that in football as well. Like, yeah. How many times did Milan break the world transfer record?
Absolutely.
In the late 80s, yeah, and early 90s?
He did that in volleyball, he did that in rugby, where the Amatori Milano team, that he owned, had the likes of David Campese, an Australian rugby great, Diego Dominguez, who went on to become Italy's starting fly half for the next 15 years. Now, the irony here, of course, the Amatori Milano team means amateurs, Milan. There was nothing amateur about Berlusconi, certainly not about the wages he paid.
Yeah.
And the only stumbling block Berlusconi had is that while Milan hoovered up trophies in football, his teams won trophies in other sports. They won across various sports. They won European trophies. They won a couple of Scudettos in rugby, a couple of Scudettos in baseball. But the crowds never lived up to it.
Yeah.
So you had about, like, the volleyball team, the Gonzaga Milano team, would draw an average of about 7,000, which was a big average for a volleyball team, and peaked up to like 10,000, 12,000 for the big European nights. But they never were a part of the fabric of the city as much as AC Milan.
So therefore he couldn't create a dynasty in the way
he could have created a dynasty. And I think he really annoyed him that he's like, you know, I'll follow the same blueprint I'm following with AC Milan. We've got great players, we've got great coaches. You know, when he took over the volleyball team, his first move was to hire the man who had won the gold at the 1984 Olympics with the US, because he figured if he's good enough to win gold at the Olympics on Olympic soil, then we can just hire him and get him to come over. And again, it goes to speak to the power of the money he had.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you are like a celebrity, not just a celebrity, but you're like arguably one of the most famous coaches in US sports. And a TV mogul from Italy gets on the phone and gets you over and, you know, hey, presto, you're over in Milan. So the crowds never quite matched the excitement that Berlusconi had for this project and the caliber of the players on this play. So by 1994, Berlusconi decided, I want to enter politics. This Polisportiva project is too big for me. I can't handle this and politics. As a matter of fact, it didn't even Milan fell behind in the list of priorities because politics was his big thing. Gets elected as prime minister, and then he basically says, look, I've taken this as far as I can. In typical Berlusconi style, he wasn't the reason why the project was failing. The project was failing because of someone else. Yeah. Mysterious dark forces were at play, you know. It wasn't his fault. The project were eventually wound up at different stages. The rugby club won another two league titles. The volleyball team won another Coppa Italia, I believe. But the thing is that if you look at them now, all the clubs, apart from the baseball team, I think all the one-on-ones had either failed completely when Boston then had been sort of came back in for more Phoenix club. And I think that we always associate Berlusconi with AC Milan and all the successes there, which has been transformational for football. And he came really close to have a transformational effect on all the sports in Italy. Now, of course, football dominates the Atlantic Italy, you know yourself. And it feels almost strange that this dynasty just sort of petered out amongst
them. Yeah, because, you know, I didn't know about his venture into other sports until I read your article for our viewers, destinationcalcio.com, for Dan's cracking piece on the Berlusconi dynasty. But I didn't know about that he tiptoed into other sports. I always associated Berlusconi, aside from the politics and everything else, I always associated him with calcio. I didn't know that he did volleyball and basketball and all the rest.
Yeah.
So it kind of shows that his other ventures did fail, in a sense, because he never created a dynasty, or that he tried to do.
Yeah,
know, with,
I mean, I think if you can make a case that probably, even for someone as ambitious as he was, probably bit off more than he could chew.
Yeah.
But then again, by the same token, you know, when, as you said earlier, at the top of the show, you said he was a victim of his own success because he was forced to sell Milan because he couldn't compete with the levels of spending that football has reached. I do wonder whether he was a victim of his own success even within Milan, because AC Milan was such a dominant brand long before the word brand became to be associated with clubs.
Yeah.
That, you know, there is just no space for other sports.
Yeah.
Let alone other clubs.
Yeah. Because Milan were all conquering. And because of, coincidentally enough, the rise of television, football on television, you know, we spoke on the episode about Hernan Crespo and he fell in love. You know, he's a young boy in Argentina. And he wanted to play for Milan because he saw Milan on television. He saw Van Basten, Hullet, Rijkaard, and that's down to Berlusconi. So Milan probably became all-consuming.
Absolutely.
And the
brand. That was the other side of it, because Berlusconi was so instrumental in the Champions League and the sort of the birth of the Champions League as we know it now, rather as we knew it until last season, we should say. And by sheer coincidence, all the European Cup and Champions League games in Italy were broadcast on his own channels.
Yeah.
And again, you could make a case that conflict of interest, perhaps, but by the same token, he was, as we said, among the first to spot the potential for football as an entertainment product and to get the TV rights from the Champions League on his own channels. And, I mean, it would be, these days, it's almost impossible to comprehend that someone will look at the Champions League thinking, you know what, probably not for us. We don't need to invest. We don't have to get involved in a bidding war for that kind of stuff. But, you know, back 30 years ago, there was, the European Cup had been on state television, but you will get the final, you will get perhaps the semi-finals, but it was like, you know, it was like here, you know, you will get the FA Cup final.
Yeah.
Football was at a premium. You know, it wasn't ubiquitous as it is these days.
Yeah.
It was ahead of that. And
So obviously now the Berlusconis have finally exited sport for good. With the rise, you know, the increase and rise of US consortiums in Serie A, in Serie B, are you sad for the demise, but the end of the family conglomerate owning a club? Do you think it's gone, it's past the sell-by date? Or how do you feel about the growing rise of US consortiums in calcio?
I mean, I don't think it's sad per se, you know, like I don't think we should be very, very careful of painting Berlusconi as, you know, this white knight, because we all know that he's usually the divisive figure at best. But I do think that perhaps people of his era, the likes of Berlusconi, the likes of Moratti at Inter Milan, the likes of, to an extent, I mean, like the Sensi family at Roma, and there was more of a case of, they weren't custodians of a club because they made enormous amounts of money out of those clubs, but there was more of a feeling like this is not just a case of an asset that we can sort of sweat as much to get as much return commit as we can. But I think that, you know, we know it full well. The football is far too down the track for any of that to be reversed. And
you
know, I think any investment in football should be welcomed, but in moderation. And, you know, we know that when, you know, US funds get involved, they only have one thing in mind, and that's making as much money as they can.
Do you think that investing in a Serie B club makes financial sense?
It does in places like Pisa, Venice, Como, obviously they're not a Serie B club anymore, and the likes of Monza probably as well, because you've got this, that is not just, like, you're not just tied to the football. The football is an accessory to a standalone brand. Like, Venice doesn't need football to be... Venice is Venice, exactly. Pisa is Pisa. Monza would be an interesting one, because Monza is famous but just among sports fans. So I think it'll be interesting to see whether it's gonna have the same degree of success. It may well do. Because, you know, Venice is Venice, but Venezia have not been a success story by any stretch.
Yeah.
I think that the most intriguing aspect of it is which club is next, because we said the clubs that you can associate yourself to that they don't need promoting are probably been exhausted by now in Italy.
Yeah.
Napoli would have been the perfect opportunity 10 years ago. De Laurentiis got there.
Yeah.
I suppose if you had really deep pockets, Lazio maybe.
Yeah. And I think even with, as you said, Napoli and Lazio were kind of the last two big clubs standing in terms of they have Italian owners. But De Laurentiis and Letito probably won't sell. De Laurentiis said he would pass the club down to his son?
Yeah.
Or it might have been Letito, one of the two. But I do think they are the last big clubs that haven't been hoovered up by US consortiums.
Yeah.
But so what do you think is next then for a potential US takeover? Will we see more of it?
I think we will. I think it's inevitable. I think we'll see more because, you know, you look at, like you mentioned, De Laurentiis and Letito. Both of them have repeatedly made out that owning a club is a burden.
Yeah.
You know, the way they go about it, they're like, I'm being asked to spend all this money to stay competitive. I don't want to be spending all this money necessarily. You know, yeah, you see the Scudetto and trophies are all well and good, but football is increasingly a business. And I think that's why it's so appealing to a lot of US investors. Like, Italy is appealing to, because you can pick up clubs for relatively cheap.
Yeah, compared to NFL clubs or Premier League clubs, it's a pittance.
But that's the other side. The downside to that is that the TV rights are a pittance compared to the Premier League. And let's not even go compared to the NBA or the NFL.
Yeah, no.
I mean, you still have clubs that have huge potential. You're thinking of like the likes of Sampdoria, for example, the likes of Torino.
Teams with large fan bases and, you know, rich histories.
Yeah. I mean, you look at what happened with Wrexham. The entire world now knows about Wrexham.
Yeah.
Because of a documentary. Could you see that happening in Italy? You probably could. But at the same time, I feel there is a sort of not mentality, but there's this dynamic in Italy where a lot of investors are just happy to do the bare minimum. Like, you know, we are taking it from Serie C to Serie B.
Yeah.
And that's enough. We don't need to spend anymore, because then, as you know yourself, you know, getting promoted to Serie A involves infrastructure costs.
Yeah.
And all the rest of it. And then, of course, those who are willing to spend, such as Comiso Fiorentina, then they clash with the bureaucracy and...
Yeah, they're stifled in increasing the revenue.
Yeah.
Which then makes them not want to spend.
Exactly.
Because they know they're not getting a return on their investment.
Exactly. And this, you know, having revenue, like flatlining revenue is, again, I'm not an expert in economics, but flatlining revenue is not something you want to put on a prospect if you are selling a club of any kind.
And I think that is what Italian fans have an issue with US owners, in that they're not willing to go, you know, the old adage, to make money, you have to spend money. They don't subscribe to that in football. They want to see returns first, and then they'll spend what you have. But football doesn't work like that. Berlusconi didn't treat Milan like that. He put a lot of money in before they got to the Scudettos and, you know, the European Cups.
You look at Milan now, where the balance sheet Scudetto. He's yeah. the only Scudetto they compete yeah. for.
They missed out on the Champions League, so they sold to Gianni Rangers to Man City yeah. to balance the books.
No, exactly. Yeah. I mean, there isn't obviously an argument to be made for like financial stability.
Yeah, of course.
But I think to go back to the original question, no, I don't think we'll see family dynasties involved anymore. It's just yeah. not worth it, probably.
No, exactly. All right, Dan, thank you for that chat on all things Berlusconi and US consortiums in Italian football. And if you want to find out more, go to destinationcalcio.com and find out the great article from Dan. What do you think on the Berlusconi family dynasty in Calcio? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing that it's over? Let us know in the comments. And what are your opinions on US consortiums? Let us know. We'd like to hear from fans all around the world. That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. Ciao for now.